And as we begin this Easter Sunday morning with a sermon entitled Postcards from Your Spiritual Journey, I'd like to share with you a verbal postcard that will help frame our time together this morning. I recently presented a sermon at another Unitarian Universalist congregation wherein two foundational concepts of mathematics, classical math, helped illustrate some broader points about religion. The concepts that mentioned from the pulpit were, one, the simple fact that parallel lines never meet, and two, the transitive property of equality, which essentially means if A equals B and B equals C, then A is going to equal C. These are bedrock math. It provided a foundation for this really fun sermon. We played with the idea of a metaphorical equal sign, and we compared the wisdom statements of the Buddha, of Jesus, and of Lao Tzu. For example, here's a wisdom statement that finds the home in the Golden Rule file. Here's the statement from Jesus. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And then a similar statement from the Buddha. Consider others as yourself. Doesn't that sound like a dreamy Sunday morning? Just making those comparisons and thinking about math, etc. But we need to remember that this story is set in a Unitarian Universalist congregation. And we just spent 20 minutes, very interesting minutes, interweaving bedrock math with some religious wisdom statements. And immediately after the sermon, a retired doctor met me at the pulpit and said, you know, you're not quite right about that equal sign. I was heartened to hear the message that I wasn't quite right, rather than absolutely wrong, which is oftentimes what I hear after a sermon at a Unitarian Universalist congregation. It comes with the territory. Our good doctor said, you know, in quantum mathematics, A doesn't necessarily equal C. And his eyes were sparkling. I welcomed the feedback. And I said that I needed to brush up on my quantum mathematics. And then at coffee hour, a retired professor approached me and told me, you know, in the Euclidean world, parallel lines never meet, but quantum mechanics suggests that parallel lines may meet. Eyes again sparkling. I welcomed the feedback, said that I needed to brush up on my quantum mechanics. And I said, you know, I thought to myself, just how wonderful is this? That even the certainty of equal signs, even the certainty that parallel lines meet, even those certainties in a Unitarian Universalist congregation are up to question. And what the sparkling eyes of the doctor and the sparkling eyes of the professor, what they betrayed is the delight, the absolute delight in broadening the context. And I think that Easter might just be a quantum religious holiday. And it reminds us that what we're seeing with our eyes, what we're seeing with our mind, may not necessarily reflect ultimate reality. That's a very Platonic notion, capital U, ultimate, capital R, reality. Perhaps better stated as quantum reality. Because there are vast, vast universes of thought, of experience, of imagination that your brain, that your heart, and that your soul have yet to visit, have yet to register, perceive, or even comprehend. And this is an invitation to an exhilarating and radical humility, which, if practiced well, puts you on the same team as the wisest person who has ever lived, Socrates, because he knew that he did not know, and yet he persisted, always persisted in asking deep questions, deeper questions, always philosophizing, asking questions to the point of becoming so annoying to the power structures that the state decided that it was better to execute Socrates. Not unlike the execution of Jesus. So the word of the day that Sunday morning was quantum. And true to my word about brushing up on those realms of quantum, after I arrived home from church that Sunday, I went to my office and I pulled down the one book that I knew in my personal library had the word quantum in it. And the title is The Quantum Bigfoot. As in Sasquatch. And since I was a little boy, I have always had a soft spot in my heart for Bigfoot. And as a mature adult, I have gathered together a small library about Bigfoot, and a few years ago even attended a lecture from a quote-unquote Bigfoot researcher. And to help financially support this person's research, I bought all of his books, all of his CDs, specifically a CD of recorded Bigfoot sounds. Someday I know, they exist. Someday I do plan to do a sermon on Bigfoot, though this morning I am simply going to quote one sentence from the introduction of a book called The Quantum Bigfoot. Quote, "In this book, I am persuaded to present a reasonable correlation between the rules of quantum science as the foundation of spirituality and how it could relate to those creatures known as Bigfoot." And did you catch that? The rules of quantum science as the foundation for spirituality, which brings us to the famous quote by Einstein, who was no stranger to the word quantum. Quote, "The most beautiful," Einstein's words, "the most beautiful emotion we can experience is the mystical. It is the power of all true art and science. They to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. To know," Einstein still, "to know that what is impenetrable to us really exists, manifesting itself as the highest wisdom and the most radiant beauty, which our dull faculties can comprehend only in their most primitive forms, this knowledge, this feeling, is at the center of true religiousness. In this sense, and in this sense only, I belong to the rank of devoutly religious people," close quote. Now, I just simply absolutely love the quote that the most beautiful emotion we can experience is the mystical. It is the power of all true art and science. Now, Easter's resurrection story is a profound example of the mystical, life after death. And there's also the mystical of life within life. And here's postcard number one. My neighbor, I will call him Mr. X, was taking his morning walk around the block. Mr. X is an ex-Marine, an ex-psychology teacher, an ex-back to the lander. He is tough as nails. He drinks strong Negronis every evening. He loves to ride his bicycle. He loves to kayak. He soaks most days in his hot tub. He plays the banjo and the guitar, and he is a devout atheist. A devout atheist who really enjoys teasing me about my going to church. "Hey, Mr. X," I said when I saw him, "how's it going?" He stopped walking. He looked directly at me. "Everything is so beautiful," he said. This did not sound like Mr. X. Now, please know that it was an average winter morning in the Olympic Peninsula. The sun was behind clouds, there was gray mist in the air, and temperature was cool. "What's beautiful?" I asked as I crossed the street to be near him. "Everything. Everything. I'm just so overwhelmed by it. Look at that branch. Look how beautiful that branch is." And with his cane, he pointed at a leafless cherry tree, which in a few months will be festooned with blossoms, and then with the help of pollinators will emerge this glorious, glorious fruit. And I could see that Mr. X's eyes were rimmed with tears. And I instinctively knew that I was in the presence of a human being having a profound experience, what I will call a spiritual experience. We were not atop the Himalayas. We were not practicing yoga in an ashram. We were not walking the labyrinth at Chart Cathedral. We were simply neighbors, standing side by side along the edge of a road early morning January with gray mist in the air, admiring the beauty of a bare branch, the bare branch of a cherry tree. And an old man's eyes were filling with tears because the world was so utterly, so fabulously, so profoundly beautiful. And I chose to be silent, to not respond with words, to simply be with my neighbor, to bear witness to what was happening to him, to nod at his words, to nod at the words that he was inspired to share. Just look at that branch. Now, I could have been in the presence of William Blake or St. Teresa or Rumi, and the branch, it was beautiful. Though truth be told, I was looking with my eyes while Mr. X was seeing with his whole being, seeing the branch with his eyes rimmed with tears. The most beautiful emotion that we can experience is the mystical. It is the power of true art and science. Postcard number two. This past fall, a young person that I know was hospitalized for 10 days with a manic episode. They had never, ever experienced mania before. And while in the hospital, they experienced a psychotic break. Eventually, they were diagnosed with bipolar disorder type 1, classic case, said the psychiatrist. This is all new territory for this person. After being released from the hospital, I had the opportunity to spend a day with this person and listen to their stories, listened about how they're trying to figure out what happened, how to stay grounded now, how to manage the new regime of medicine and therapy, and the mysteries of what lies ahead. They'd shared that their mania was a profound experience, what they called a spiritual experience. Now, other people in their life, those who are helping this person through their hospitalization, the doctors, the nurses, the loved ones, they always called the phenomenon mania. The mania that was a symptom of mental illness. And this person bristles at the phrase mental illness, though they never, ever want to return to the depression that preceded the mania, the depression in which they suffered for the first time in their life, suicidal ideation. In the hospital, my favorite therapy sessions were called music therapy, they said, where we would just listen to music. When I got out of the hospital, I was listening to music, and this song came up on my feed, a song I had never heard by an artist I didn't even know. But after the last note faded, I pressed repeat on my phone, and I listened again, and then again, and then, again, and then, again, and then, again. I just love that song. Do you want to hear it? Definitely. Definitely. I definitely want to hear that song, I said. So they beseeched the internet gods. They brought the song through their phone by pressing the button play, which is the best button in the world, by the way, that play button, and sound filled the air. There was a vaguely familiar guitar, and then the lyrics started, and I instantly recognized the words. This was an obscure song by an independent folk singer, and the opening lyrics go like this. Inside the tunnels, the stone tunnels of the trains, and inside the trains, the steel trains are bags of skin. And inside the thin skin are the blood and the bones. And inside the blood and the bones are the dreams. It really is that simple. It really is that fragile. And I am one such dream inside the blood and the bones and the bags and the tunnels and the trains. And there's this dream sitting next to me. There's this dream sitting across from me. Fragile. I love that song, I said. And I shared this story. I saw that folk singer at a live gig at a small venue in Port Townsend. And after the show, to help him along his way, I bought all of his CDs. And on a recent trip, I took along one of his CDs, just grabbed it at random, and I listened to it while rolling down Highway 101. And after I heard that song that you just played, I pressed repeat over and over and over and over again. I listened to it 10, 12 times in a row, just like you were doing 3,000 miles away. Now, given the timing, we might have been pressing repeat at the very same moment. Now, how weird, how quantum is that? The song is called Dreams by Peter Mulvey, or The Dreams by Peter Mulvey, and it ends with these lyrics. We all know that one day the tunnels will crumble and the trains will stop and the blood and the bags and the bones will be gone. And in between now and then, something will happen to all the dreams. I don't know what will happen to the other dreams, but I know what will happen to me. Sure as rain, I know. Sure as winter, I'll breathe and I'll grieve and struggle and strive and love, love, love. And if I'm lucky, once, just once, the dream will drop to the floor like a vase and shatter in shards of silence, where I will see in the pattern of the pieces, I will see something. This will happen. But now the train, with all its fragile cargo, rolls on. One aspect of what my friend loved about the song was the line, I will see in the pattern of the pieces, I will see something. Because in their mania, they saw patterns everywhere. They were able to make connections where before there were no discernible connections to make. This is a classic symptom of mania, making these connections. And perhaps it's in a manic state when the seventh principle of Unitarian Universalism reveals itself most vividly: respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And I would just like to point out that that last principle, it doesn't say that we're interconnected in that web. It says we're interdependent in that web. Again, Einstein. The most beautiful emotion we can experience is the mystical. It is the power of all true art and science. Excuse me. Postcard number 3. Your postcard. A story from your spiritual journey. Perhaps you are like the millions of people with addictions to drugs or alcohol who enter treatment and began working the 12 steps. If you are sober and if you are clean, you can likely tell us all a vivid story of your spiritual experience along your journey towards sobriety, a spiritual journey, if ever there was one. Perhaps as a younger person, you took LSD at a Grateful Dead show and danced like a whirling dervish and became the heartbeat of the universe. Perhaps you sat in Zen meditation and experienced that initial awakening called Kensho. Perhaps the world opened up at the birth of your child. Perhaps the world opened up at the death of your spouse. I know an attorney in Los Angeles who was the victim of a violent crime and after emerging from a coma, gave up his law practice, changed his name, traveled to India searching for a deeper meaning in his life. And decades later, His memorial service took place in a Unitarian Universalist fellowship. It was standing room only. And the love expressed by those in mourning was profound. And one of the gifts at that memorial service was sourdough starter. So I imagine there are loaves of sourdough bread still being created by that starter. Perhaps you dove into a cold river after soaking in a hot spring and you fell overdrive alive. Perhaps on this Easter Sunday, you sipped tea and you truly tasted tea. Perhaps, and the possibilities are endless. To quote the French philosopher and Jesuit priest Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, quote, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Just look at that branch. Amen.